Thomas, you're going to come and talk to us about something completely different?
Yes. It's a new item for initial consideration. The committee received a request to address the accounting for investments in subsidiaries by newly established intermediate parents in its separate financial statements, not the consolidated financial statements. In particular, the submitter is concerned about newly established intermediate parents that account for their investments in subsidiaries in their separate financial statement at cost in accordance with paragraph 38A of IAS 27. The request addresses group reorganizations in which the original parent with multiple subsidiaries establishes a new intermediate parent between itself and several subsidiaries in a share-for-share exchange, as to illustrated in paragraph 4 of the agenda paper. In such reorganizations, a new intermediate parent typically acquires the original parent's interest in the subsidiaries in exchange for its own equity instruments, that is, the equity instruments that it issues to the original parent. In other words, the new intermediate parent, A, for example, acquires in the scenario presented in paragraph 4 of the agenda paper the original parent's shareholdings in subsidiary A and subsidiary D in exchange for the new equity instruments that it issues to the original parent as part of this reorganization. IAS 27 now does not define costs. However, we note that based on analogy to other IFRSs like IAS 16, IAS 38, and IAS 14, that it is generally understood that cost is the fair value of the consideration given. For certain reorganizations, however, paragraphs 38B and 38C of IAS 27 require a different approach for determining cost of the investment. Instead of determining the cost of the investments by the fair value of the consideration given, these paragraphs require the new intermediate parent to measure cost at the carrying amount of its share of the equity items shown in the separate financial statements of the subsidiaries at the date of the reorganization. We call this approach the previous carrying amount basis. Such reorganization shares several characteristics set out in the basis for conclusion and in the paragraph itself, and one of these is that the assets and the liabilities of the new group and the original entity or the original group are the same immediately before and after the reorganization. Considering this characteristic for the scenario presented in paragraph 4 of the agenda paper, we think that this characteristic is critical for the application of the previous carrying amount basis to the scenario presented in paragraph 4 of the agenda paper for the following reason. Looking at it from the perspective of the original parent, from top down, it's apparent that the group of the new intermediate parent, for example A, only includes the assets and liabilities of subsidiary A and D, whereas the group of the original parent also included the assets and liabilities of subsidiary B, C, and E. Looking at from the perspective of the subsidiary, it's apparent that the group of the new intermediate parent A, which is the new group, also includes the assets and liability of subsidiary D, whereas subsidiary A, that's the original entity, did not. The submitter noted that three different views have emerged in practice on whether this previous carrying amount basis, what we called it, can be applied to the type of reorganization presented in paragraph 4 of the agenda paper. View one is, the new intermediate parent must determine the cost of their investments in the subsidiaries by the fair value of the consideration given. View two is, the new intermediate parent must apply the previous carrying amount basis to determine the cost of their investment in the subsidiaries and few deals, you have an accounting policy choice. In our view, these different views result from different conclusions on the following issues. One issue is, are the reorganizations presented in paragraph 4 of the agenda paper within the scope of paragraph 48b and c of IS 27? Or can this guidance at least be applied by analogy? In this case, you would be permitted to apply the previous carrying amount basis. If one says these transactions are not in the scope of paragraph 38b and c of IS 27, you cannot apply this previous carrying amount basis. We think you have to apply the determined cost based on the fair value of the consideration given for the shareholdings in the subsidiaries. We think that paragraphs 38b and 38c of IS 24 do not require the application of the previous carrying amount basis to this type of reorganizations presented in paragraph 4 of the agenda because of the following reason. They are not in the scope of these paragraphs because, as already mentioned, the group of the new intermediate parent, A, for example, does include the assets and liabilities of subsidiary D, but not the assets and liabilities of subsidiary, only the assets and liabilities of subsidiary A as before the reorganization. In addition, we think you cannot apply this previous carrying amount basis by analogy, because it's an exception to the general principle of determining cost by the fair value of the consideration given. And this type of reorganization do not share the above-mentioned characteristics of these type of reorganizations, that the assets and the liabilities of the new group and the original entity are the same immediately before and after the reorganization. Therefore, we recommend that the committee should not add the issue to its agenda because there's sufficient guidance on this issue in the standard. Consequently, we propose to take the tentative agenda decision presented in Appendix A of the paper and want to ask the following questions to the committee. Does the committee agree with our analysis presented in the agenda paper? Does the committee agree with our recommendation not to take the issue onto its agenda? And does the committee have any questions on the proposed wording for the tentative agenda decision presented in Appendix A of the agenda paper?
Thank you, Thomas. Does anybody have any comments or questions on the staff analysis in paragraph 16 to 32? Ido?
It's actually a question. I understand that the staff identified one of the prerequisites in 38B as, well, let's say, very important in order to decide whether you can apply or not apply what is in 38B, which is that the assets and liabilities of the new group or the original group are the same. And I agree that formally that's not the case in the situation that we have here. Now, I was asking myself, at the end of the day, we also in the situation that is described in the submission, it's kind of a reorganization within a group. And I was trying to find a reason why we could not apply by analogy 38B. And for me, such a reason would be that the prerequisites, you know, what do you think is the reason behind prerequisite 38BB? Why did the board include this prerequisite and said, well, only if you have this, that the assets and liabilities are the same, you can apply these predecessor cost accounting? And I don't, you know, because your arguments are heavily based on this piece, so I would expect that we know something about the reasoning why the board thinks, why the staff thinks that the board thinks that this is one of the most important issues.
So we start by asking Philippe to explain his dissent to this amendment.
Well, maybe, I don't know, Thomas first or Philippe first, I don't care. Because, you know, just looking at it from a substance point of view, I can see some arguments that this is still the whole group, nothing has changed within the group. Why would you have this step up? And, you know, that's formally...
Because we're not in the group, though. This is the individual, the separate financial statements of the entity that has acquired these new subsidiaries.
All right. But still, it's part of a control group. I agree that it's a separate financial statement. So,
yeah, the answer to your question in the first one was that the original change was intended where a group created a new parent entity on top of itself.
Yep.
And so it would have the same shareholders, they would be issued shares, and the group would be identical going all the way down, except it would have this one extra layer on the top, in which case the cost of the thing at the top was calculated by the, effectively, by what was underneath. It was then further modified, and I can't remember why, but probably somebody who wanted some absolute symmetry in here to say, well, if you don't put the new parent on top, but you put a new parent as an intermediate step, even if the thing underneath wasn't a parent itself, that you could still get the same situation. So a one-to-one relationship would be maintained either above if you put it on top or below somewhere down in the structure. So the question here is now, if you've created something that is not a one-to-one relationship, what is the justification for using carryover accounting?
Well, because, as you said, I think what's most important here is that you still have the same shareholders. They own 100% of the whole thing. Nothing has changed.
From the group, yeah.
Yeah, from the group.
And what about in the separate financial statements?
So, okay, now I understand that would be then the answer saying, well, because you have separate financial statements, it doesn't matter that within the group nothing has changed. It's just looking at the separate financial statements, and that's why 38BB is so important. Okay.
Scott?
I would have thought that the best argument for using carryover cost or original parents' cost would be that this is a common control transaction. Even when you're dealing with separate financials, it's still all under common control, and the board has a project on common control transactions. This will be part of it, at least according to the scope that's described in paragraph 6B, which says the board tentatively decided the scope of the common control transactions project should include the accounting in the acquirer's consolidated and the separate financial statements. So I would have thought if one was making an argument for possibility of not doing fair value, it would be that this is a common control transaction. The board hasn't provided guidance on common control transactions as of yet. So I would actually prefer the agenda decision also reference the common control project that I think it's going to take care of separate financial statements as well as consolidated, and leave it at that as a reason why this is an open question.
I'd encourage the board to do it expeditiously.
Whatever we do in the last one.
Michael.
Yeah, I was just going to say, Scott, I agree with your observation about the common control business combinations projects referencing both consolidated and separate financial statements. What I think is different here, though, is that this is about separate financial statements, and there is no scope exception to IAS 27 or IFRS 10 for common control transactions. It's only IFRS 3 that scopes them out, and so that's why I think this is fundamentally different from what we've looked at before.
I do see that. Now, that I wasn't aware that the common control transactions project was a common control business combinations project. I thought it was a common control transactions project, so that this will be picked up in that project. It may be that the accounting for this in current IFRS is actually clear, and that when the board picks it up in the common control project, it may change that, as opposed to the common control business combination in consolidated financial statements, in which case there's no current guidance. Maybe we think there is guidance now, but in any event, I would have I would make reference to the common control project as well. And you know, I think that raises questions as to whether fair value is required. But quite frankly, I can certainly read IAS 27. You know, in that section regarding separate financial statements, there is no scope out for common control transactions. But boy, that seems odd. And I am aware that the definition of cost is often as interpreted as cost to the group under common control, rather than cost to this reporting entity. So I would have said that it's common control transaction. The board's got a project. We understand the arguments for fair value. There are also arguments for cost. Leave it to the board.
Okay. Kaz?
Yes. Thank you. Well, I agree with Vito and Scott. And I think I understand a separate financial statement, but in terms of the group, it's a kind of common control. So I understand your document, and then from interpretation perspective, I understand. I think I have to agree with that. But I have a sympathy with that requester, because from preparer's perspective, when you decide the reorganization within the group and establish the parent company in the middle, and they have to reorganize with using IFRS 3. And at the whole parent consolidation level, we have to eliminate anyway. So this is, from cost perspective, burden perspective, it is kind of difficult. So that is one thing. But the other thing is that this is from whole group companies implement individually IFRS. So that is the situation. So I think that is all jurisdictions are moving toward that direction. Maybe some are not, but that might cause, because of the divergence between the IFRS and the local GAAP, might be some issue. Because particularly in Japan, it allows the using that previously and actually carrying value basis. So that discourages to implement IFRS for the whole group. So that is probably the one area. And so it's not an interpretation issue, but I just want to address that.
It's motivation, not interpretation. Andrew?
On the main issue, I suppose I'm not really convinced there should be any difference between the one-to-one situation and the one-to-two or one-to-three. I'm not quite sure what sin we would be committing in the circumstances of this wider group. But I'm not going to, you know, if that's the will. If it seems to me that the basis for ruling the one-to-two or the one-to-three out is the actual rule or the exception to the rule the board has put in IAS 27 rather than any general principle, well, so be it. But I have to say, personally, I'm not convinced of the reason for difference. I had a slightly different point, though.
Sorry, Andrew, can I just come back to you on that before you bring the other point up? This was done as an exception, so don't look for a principle. That when this was discussed by the board, there was a practical issue that was also contained in here as well. If you recognize the cost of these investments in the new holding company at the fair value of the shares that have been issued, in effect, for those jurisdictions that restrict dividend payments to out of retained profits or earned profits, then you would freeze all the prior profits that would otherwise have been available for distribution, which is one of the reasons why carryover was favoured by those people that petitioned the board on this.
So
the same concern that you've highlighted, the one for one or the one for three, still exists, that you could freeze the profits, the board's decision on making it so restrictive, and it was not cost to the group that I recall was agreed. It was a proportion of the assets and liabilities of the group, which is different from the cost of the group, as being the cost of the investment. So there was a change that was introduced in there. But by making it so narrow, it reduces the risk of unintended consequences, because the principle that you'd be looking for in here is, when do you not use fair value? Charlotte, I'm surprised you haven't reminded me of that already. And the not using fair value would be, in some circumstances, where the rearrangement was all under common control and some or no parties were affected on the outside, because the board hasn't looked at that. It didn't move any wider than that. So this is an exception, which is one of the reasons that I don't think it's appropriate to analogize to it. It may seem illogical to have one exception and not others, but that's the trouble of making exceptions. Everybody else wants one.
Well, if the board clearly considered the 1 to 2 and the 1 to 3 and decided that they wanted to make the exception narrower, then that's very helpful to this debate.
Yeah, I mean, the consideration could have been, which is something I guess that is on people's minds at the moment, that you have the creation of two parent companies, one that looks after good bank, retail bank, and one that looks after bad bank, the investment banking operations. And in those circumstances, you don't get the exception under 38 B and C.
Okay. So my other point was, Thomas said in the paper that it's generally understood that cost equals fair value of the consideration given, and absolutely agree with that. I just wonder whether that's the same as we say in the agenda decision, where we call it a general principle, because, I mean, there are a number of situations where cost is not the fair value of consideration given. Scott mentioned, you know, all sorts of group reorganisation situations, common control transactions, and one other thing, the project we have on the way undergo on contingent pricing. You know, we're not quite sure on day one whether the debit is just for the cash cost or there's some other debit in terms of the fair valuation of the consideration given for any potential future payment. So I just thought that was potentially loose wording, and I'd rather leave the agenda decision rejection focusing on the narrowness of the exception in IS 27 and the looking at the limited circumstances in which a parent establishes a new parent in this particular manner, as the words in BC 66M IS 27. I'd much prefer to stick the agenda decision on that rather than talking about general principles of cost equal and fair value.
Okay. John?
I've been hearing what's been said here, irrespective of all of that. What I find a little bit difficult here is when I look at the groups before the reorganization and after the reorganization, what I see really is that sub A, if I take sub A and D as example, sub A is controlled by parent and sub D is controlled by parent before, and after the reorganization, it's exactly the same thing. In my mind, new intermediary parent is controlled by the original parent. So I think substantial reform, I must look through new intermediary parent and say nothing has changed. So that's the source of my lack of comfort. You know, my other point also is there's been no discussion here on the applicability or not of IFRS 2. I was led to believe that the use of fair value was partly by referring to IFRS 2. Maybe I'm wrong with that, but that's what I thought. And if that would be the case, then I think IFRS 2 should not override the substance of what we're doing here. So I understand the mechanic. I understand you have a new company. It's reports, it reports on its own behalf. Nevertheless, I think, don't we have a concept that substantial reform should prevail? In which case, I don't see any basis to use fair value here.
You don't see any basis to use fair value?
No. on the basis of substantive reform, that's my view, sorry. Let me rephrase that.
On the basis of substantive reform, I have to remind you, these are the separate financial statements of the acquiring entity. It's a new entity that's being created, and it is acquiring something.
What I say, Bob, is this new entity that's been created, when I look at the substance of this transaction, I look through the new entity, and I say that's a non-significant year, because there is absolutely no change of control whatsoever, no change in the businesses before and after. So I have some difficulties to see that. I could not look through and say, this is the original parent before and after. And this, I see the mechanic. I see how you can get there, but I'm saying you can take another view and say, irrespective of that mechanic, I don't think we should revalue.
Take another view absent the existing accounting literature. Bernd?
I was just asking Luca, because I'm quite confused here. Are we talking about the separate financial statement of new co-parent A? We're not talking about the consolidated financial statement of new co-parent A.
Exactly.
So they only have two assets, sub A, sub B, and we're talking about the carrying amount of these two assets.
The cost.
The cost.
The cost. And this can be different from the one that's in the original parent separate amount, separate financial statements.
Yes.
Okay, that's the point. Understood.
Okay, happy now?
I'm happy. I was just wondering if I get the problem.
So do you agree with the staff?
Well, I'm wondering why we are debating this, because if they produce their accounts for means of publication, they would not produce separate but consolidated ones.
No, because these are intermediate parents, and they may use the exemption permitted not to produce consolidated financial statements. And instead of doing the sensible thing and reporting their subsidiaries at fair value under IAS 39, or IFRS 9 now, they have decided that they will report them at cost, some meaningless historical figure.
And whom are they reporting to?
That's not our concern. They're reporting. And they want to assert that they're complying with IFRS.
Okay.
But for example, they may have reporting responsibilities to the tax authorities, to government departments, etc., to file their financial statements. So they're a legal entity. If they are preparing financial statements from the point of view of their separate financial statements, what are the numbers that they need to disclose?
Okay, but by putting in a new co in between me, I'm the original parent, and some subs, I can change the fair value of the subs within this several layers, because I can't change the fair value, because the fair value is the fair value. I can change the reported value within the group, because in my original parent's separate financial statements, it's different from in...
No. The 12K was in the original parent's...
Exactly.
Consolidated.
Exactly, but so in the original parent's separate financial statements, no change. But in the new intermediate parent, there they have a different value from the original parent's separate.
Yes.
Okay.
But the original parent may not be able to produce separate financial statements because it may be eligible.
But maybe they don't need to have an extension, but by law of their country, they have to produce separate.
Ruth?
I think we're missing a very important point here, which is that this part of IAS 27 is talking about accounting for investments in subsidiaries. It's not talking about the consolidation of subsidiaries. It's talking about how you measure the investment. And this whole debate has been about common control transactions and business combinations under common control. That's not what we're talking about here. And there seems to be an implied belief that I've heard that you can transport the common control philosophy that's scoped out of IFRS 3 into the accounting for individual investments in IAS 27. And IAS 27 is quite clear that in your separate accounts, you're accounting for your separate investment in your subsidiary. You're not doing a consolidation. It says at cost or in accordance with IAS 39. And in an exceptional circumstance, in 38B or C, you don't have to use cost. You can use previous carrying amount for the individual investment. And what's troubling me is that the arguments that I've heard are saying, well, we don't need to worry about that because we can transport the common control assumptions from IFRS 3, which are scoped out, and apply them here. Now, that's quite attractive, but I don't see that IAS 27 allows us to do that. And so I think that Thomas's technical argument is correct. What I've been hearing, I think, has, you know, it's attractive, but I'm not sure we can use it as an argument to support the application by analogy.
But what do you understand by cost?
To me, the cost is the fair value of the consideration given.
Well, if the parent entity, the original parent, had decided in setting up intermediate parent A that it would sell its two subsidiaries at an amount that represented its net asset value, reported net asset value in its consolidated financial statements, or it decided it would use its original cost in its separate financial statements, and that that would be the amount of the expense or charge that it would make to intermediate parent A, then is that the cost? Or do you think that IFRS requires a different number? Or in other words, can you just choose any figure you want because it's a related party transaction, forget about common control, but the controlling parent is going to decide what number it wants to book?
Well, I mean, the related party aspect is a good point because they can manufacture the transaction. I acknowledge that. That is a problem. But I still think that we have to either interpret IAS 27 the way it's written without implication from IFRS 3, or we just simply say we can't address it and we refer it to the board. I don't think that we should say in the agenda decision that you can apply by analogy. I don't object to what is written currently, which is the strict reading that the staff have given to it. But I would be very troubled if we said that this is all wrapped up in the business combinations on the common control issue, because I don't think it is. I think it's a different issue. Right. It's the separate accounting for the investment. It's got nothing to do with the consolidation.
Okay. Charlotte?
I suppose I'm coming from a slightly different angle that normally I see entities that would try and achieve fair value. And I suppose my concern is by doing something non-substantive, can an entity structure this in such a way that they can get the investment at fair value, whereas they've done it in another way they would have got it at cost or the sort of previous carrying value? I don't necessarily think it's an issue because I guess you could have done the same via IAS 39 anyway if you'd taken that option. That's my only other question was just on the definition of cost as being a fair value of the consideration. I thought in certain circumstances it's fair value of consideration plus transaction costs. So I wasn't sure if you were sort of excluding that in the agenda decision.
Yeah, cost would be price plus.
It just implies it's just fair, just a consideration, not expenses.
Right. Joanna?
I agree with the staff's literal interpretation of 27. I don't think you can get... Personally, don't think you can get to another answer by the way that it is written. It's pretty clear cut that it is only for a single parent, intermediate parent with a single subsidiary written in there. I think that could give the ability to do some restructuring because it effectively says thou must do it at carrying cost as opposed to you can, if you like. So you can't do it at fair value. So if you want fair value, will you put two subs in there? Because effectively we're saying you can do it, you've got to do that at fair value. And that, to me, in some ways could give a silly answer, but I think we have no option under 27. But it also, in some ways, gives a silly answer, and it does relate to your under common control. I don't think it's an analogy or anything, but if you're doing it with the two and you're doing it at fair value, that effectively means that your cost of subsidiary in your intermediate parent in the separate financial statements is at fair value. You are then required, for whatever reason, to do a consolidated set of that intermediate company, and you've got the cost of your investment at fair value, and you don't do fair value accounting, you get a very, very, very big goodwill number.
Sorry, don't do fair value accounting for what?
For your business combination under common control.
Well, that's a self-inflicted wound.
Yeah, but that's what I'm saying, that effectively it ends up, so they are, what I'm saying is that arguably the consequences of the two are linked in the long term, hopefully when the board address this project. But we can't do anything about it now. So I would support, basically, I would, though, remove the bit about the guidance about the real, I think it was Andrew who said, I can't remember who now. So just the very first bit, the very literal, because it's the one-on-one. And that's the reason that we're not doing it.
Scott?
I apologize. I think I kind of started us down this tangent, but just to clarify, building on what Ruth said, I don't believe that this is at all a business combination under common control. It's not a business combination because we're just accounting for the investment. It is a common control transaction, however. So IFRS 3 is meaningless. We don't have a business combination. But the board's common control transaction project is not only business combinations under common control. It's common control transactions. My interpretation is that it would cover the purchase by subsidiary A of inventory from subsidiary B. That's still a common control transaction. That's why I would like the reference to the project there. Even though I think that the analysis that the staff has done under IAS 27, I think that's the analysis that I would get. But I also think that the board may be changing that if it ever gets around to the common control transaction project. So that's my concern. It's not that this is a business combination under common control. I don't think it is. It's that it is a common control transaction. And to the point of what we're saying is you have to do it based on the fair value of consideration transferred. That does, as Bob pointed out, mean that this can be engineered to have the intermediate parent report this at any number that they want. So all you have to do is have new intermediate parent set up by original parent with a contribution of 100 euros of cash, and the parent then sells the subsidiaries for 100 euros. Oh, congratulations. Now they're on the books of intermediate parent at 100 euros. I think that's the implication of IAS 27, and you're allowed to use cost, which, as Bob pointed out, is not sensible. So it's there. It allows you to do whatever number you want. And I think the board's going to change that if they ever get around to the common control transaction project.
Okay. Perhaps when the board does do its common control transaction project, it will realize how big it is and do it in phases, starting with businesses under business combinations under common control. Philippe, were you wanting to comment?
I just wanted to say we should not rely, or you should not rely too much on the scope of the project, on the common control, because it's not yet an active agenda project. I think the agenda decision about the scope could be revisited possibly in the future, so do not put too much weight on that.
Let that be a warning, Scott.
That's fair.
All right. We are agreed that we're not taking this on to